Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Magazine. It's time for part two.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine, part two for this May 18th, 2023. It is 10:33 on the clock. Have your host, James, behind the mic. I am joined right now by Allison John Jack Cranberry, Outreach Specialist with UW-Madison Extension Wood County. Good morning, Allison.
Good morning, James. Good to hear from you.
You too. How you been?
Pretty wonderful. It is, I go longer spells between being on the radio than a lot of my colleagues, but there's a lot of road travel, and we have just started the spring trial season, so I'm doing good and doing a lot of traveling.
Yeah, I can imagine, especially with what you cover and everything. And while we don't get to talk to you as much as we'd like to, we always appreciate the time, Allison, especially on a topic like this. You know, cranberries, I got some breaking news for Wisconsinites. Pretty big in this state. Pretty big. Pretty big a topic. So it is great to have somebody who really knows what they're talking about on the air with us here, Allison. Let's dive right into things. There are spring and summer cranberry grower outreaches going on we want to talk about.
Yeah. So some of the things, and I am happy to talk about both what I do as the outreach specialist for cranberry growers and also to talk about, kind of public education about cranberries. So if I'm going too in-depth about cranberry agronomy, feel free to pull me back and say, hey, tell us what that looks like. I always appreciate those pulls.
You got it.
For April, when our ice was just melting, obviously it was a really slow spring this year. As our ice was just melting, we started to be able to bring the growers together and resume education about what it's like when cranberry vines come out of dormancy. We talked a lot about, we actually had a practicum hands-on. We brought microscopes and had growers bring in their own buds. And then we dissected the buds in person to look at the flower primordia, so the little itty-bitty nubs that are going to turn into the flowers for the next year. So we had growers practicing checking their buds for winter damage and also to count how many flowers they thought they would have per bud. So that was a fun project. We also had refreshers on some of our early season weed protection and on dissolved oxygen. So when we have winter floods or spring floods, sometimes people will use spring floods to try to basically drown a few bugs, kind of reduce our insect populations in a natural way. And we always want to be careful to keep dissolved oxygen at levels where the plants are still healthy. So we focused on those topics this spring. And again, feel free to...
Yeah, oh, no, I'm enjoying, this is the problem, Allison, is that I enjoy hearing you too much talk about these things, and I love learning, and I don't know that much about cranberry. I don't know much about the ag industry, or not the ag industry, but specifically cranberries, cranberry growing, a lot of this, so I'm learning, like a lot of the audience with this, so I'm not going to be able to shut you up. I'm just going to be glued to every word you say. When it comes,
guide me in favorite directions.
I will try to. I will do my best. When it comes to that, what I'm curious about is, because this research seems very important and it seems like a great opportunity to be able to have it, the research in a kind of refined way. Like it's not out in the open in the real world. This is research that's being done more in lab, more in a building, that kind of thing, correct?
We actually have both types.
It is, okay.
The jargon is there's theoretical research and there's applied research. Mm-hmm. And so we have in the labs at Madison research that is, how do cranberry buds perform? What are they using? Well, we know by now what they're using oxygen for, but when we look at the different hormones that the plant produces over the growth cycle, what is each of those hormones actually doing? And so those are kind of the theoretical research questions. And then also we'll do things like take soil samples that are like right next to the roots of ericoid species in the wild. So that's cranberries, and then the cranberries cousins are the blueberries and the brown bush or leatherleaf and Labrador tea. And so we've got grad students basically doing kind of higher level. It doesn't reach to the growers immediately, taking censuses of what kind of microbes, what bacteria, and what fungi are growing in partnership with cranberry roots and with blueberry roots. So those kinds of things are very lab-focused and, you know, Madison-based, and we'll have, you know, it'll take 10 to 15 years to get a research project on that style completed. Mm-hmm. But we also always have ongoing applied research, and those are things that the growers are, you know, directly asking, hey, when I have, and I use the words like Stevens and Mullica Queen in the way you would use like apples like Golden Delicious or Granny Smith. So the varieties, if I have a Stevens bud and it is, when they come out of dormancy, they start as a very tight bud and then they swell to what we call cabbage head. And then they go into elongation and then roughneck and then hook. So if we say I've got a Stevens variety, a Stevens bud at cabbage head phase, how cold can I let that get before I'm doing damage? And I have a Mullica Queen bud at cabbage head stage, how cold can I let that get without doing damage? And each of those varieties have a different answer. And so that's applied research. So for example, our physiologist, Amaya Atucha, will have a couple of students who are taking buds and putting them in the freezer to various temperatures and taking them out of the freezer and cutting them open and seeing if, you know, did that get damaged? So they can tell growers, you know, for this one, you know, for this variety at this growth stage, it's going to be hardy down to 16 degrees Fahrenheit, for example. So we have both theoretical and applied research going on all the time.
Which is important. And I, again, like Allison said, you know, we don't want to get caught up in the weeds. We don't want to get bogged down. Oh, geez, that was bad. That was bad. I apologize for that pun. I did not mean to do that. But to get caught up in it. But it's valuable information that you're sharing because all this, anytime we're eating a cranberry, anytime we're enjoying these things, buying cranberries, anything like that, I think we understand, hey, we're putting back into this state. Hey, we're helping our ag industry in this state. Hiring this kind of information is another part of that. It's not just enough. I don't think it's not just enough to buy these products, understanding all the work that it goes into to make them taste so good to before we even get them on our plates or anything.
Yeah, and I really like, I think it's pretty great. Wisconsin, we grow 60% of the world's cranberry supply each year comes from Wisconsin. I think last year it was 62%, but it's, you know, above 60. And not only do we have cranberry farmers and the people who sell cranberry farmers fertilizer and the people who help us make irrigation lines and the people who help us make culverts, but also a bunch of researchers, you know, kind of mainly in the cities, but where there are universities, we have a bunch of researchers and grad students, and there's another, you know, another couple hundred jobs that are cranberry industry focused that you don't really think about immediately when you see, you drive by the marsh and you say, oh, that's really cool. You don't realize that we are also the top state in cranberry research. And so there's all of that world as well.
Yeah, that's a really nice part of it, this that we don't always get to put a focus on. So touching on that like we are today and a little bit more, research trials for cranberry growers, a little bit more about that maybe? Because I find that interesting too.
Me too. And that's, I was in Nakusa yesterday, and then today I'm over in Milston placing stakes for product screening, basically. So if we're trying to find out how to control insects or control rot, I have little replicated research trials, and I go out with my little backpack CO2 sprayer, and I put out trial plots. So when growers say, hey, am I going to have better results with this if I apply just as my am I going to have better results if I make my applications timed by counting sweeps, or am I going to have better results if I time my application by the growing degree days? I can have those answers for them. And it's also really rewarding to be out on growers' marshes because a lot of growers collaborate with us on that research and let me host trials there. So I always really appreciate that.
Yeah, I can hear it in your voice. Yeah, you really like that, which is fun. It's cool. But all this ties together. We don't get those great cranberries, and Wisconsin doesn't get that great economic boost from cranberries and selling them throughout the world without this data, without this research to go into, without these trials.
Yes. We are always proud to be, you know, cutting edge. And if there are, I guess I'm very proud of Madison in particular for being so grower-led in what kind of research we do. So every year we have a research roundtable when the growers come and say, here's a question I didn't have the answer to this year that would help me be a better farmer. Here is a number that I want, you know, that I can guess, but I want you to solve it and find out for real. And then they let the researchers, you know, apply for their grants and do research based on exactly what those growers are asking for. And I think that that is absolutely the best model of research possible, like asking the users, what information do you need? And then getting them that information. It works really well.
You know, Allison, I'm reminded of a former colleague of yours, Rachel, talking with her about, again, not knowing the ag industry that well or farming that well. It was just a beautiful, cool thing to me to hear about how much more, you know, going forward, farmers are sharing of information. The ag industry is sharing of information. It's, well, this is working on my soil. This could help yours and that kind of thing. So these roundtables, yeah, not only do they make our food better, but they make our ag industry stronger. Our state stronger. Is that the way you've seen it?
I have seen that. I remember, you know, in the prior generations, if you ask my dad, oh, how was your crop this year? He's always going to answer average, whether it was actually good or actually poor. He's always going to say average. As we move forward and we learn that there's just too many possible things to know, and we want to learn them faster rather than slower, it turns out that sharing information winds up letting people all kind of raising the bar for everybody, lets everyone become a more effective farmer. And so you see people sharing in ways that maybe wasn't necessarily the default way the culture was 50 years ago. But the fact that it is now lets us get better faster. And it's very heartwarming to me.
Yeah. Speaking with Allison John-Jack Cranberry, Outreach Specialist with UW-Madison Extension Wood County. We're going to take a quick commercial break. We'll come back, talk a little bit about cranberry pollinators and some more on Morning Magazine at WFHR Locally Grown Radio. Welcome back, everybody, to Morning Magazine here on WFHR for this May 18th, 2023. 10:48 on the clock, we're speaking with Allison John-Jack, Cranberry Outreach Specialist with UW-Madison Extension Wood County. Allison, again, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
We're going to talk a little bit about cranberry pollinators right now. And again, another one of those topics I don't think is that common knowledge. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, so there are, I think there's some level of pollinator information that's just kind of always in the groundwater that everyone is aware that we care a lot about pollinators. We rely on them for a lot of our favorite foods. Cranberry growers also especially rely on them. Because corn can be pollinated by the wind, cranberries need to be pollinated by insect pollinators. And so when you heard in the news almost a decade ago, I guess, about when they were having pollinator health crises, that was a really big deal to cranberry growers. And we, along with the Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection, so DATCAP, put a lot of effort into helping keep our pollinators healthy. It's important for us. If you look at the shape of a cranberry blossom, it is kind of shaped like a crane's head, and the pollen is way deep up inside the flower. And so honeybees have to go, you know, deep in, or bumblebees can sit on the outside of the flower and buzz their wings really hard to make the pollen shake out, so that they can carry it from flower to flower as they pursue the nectar. We have, you know, basically because we are totally reliant on that, we go through a bunch of extra colony health checks. We can be pollinated by, you know, sweat bees or, you know, dark green bees or any of the kinds of bees. But the most common ones are honeybees, which are popular because they also make honey, and then also bumblebees, which are starting to be used more and more because they work in cooler temperatures, whereas honeybees, we kind of think of honeybees as like divas where they'll only come out on perfect afternoons. The bumblebees will start working in the mornings, and the bumblebees won't mind if it's a little bit cloudy. So we a lot of times will see marshes either rent honeybees or buy bumblebees, in addition to helping out their wild pollinator, the wild pollinators that are inherent to the marsh.
Go
ahead and ask questions.
Any growers also have bee farms as well nearby? It's easy for me to say that. It seems like a lot more work to have that along with also doing the cranberry bogging, but there seems to be a connection there.
There definitely is a connection there, and you do see several growers that keep bees as well. A lot of times the limiting factor on that is if you have an extra person, maybe an extra family member, who has the time and ability to do the bees, because you're processing honey at about the same time as you're harvesting cranberries. And obviously harvesting cranberries is the busiest time of the year. So there are families that have somebody who's in charge of the bees. But there are also a lot of growers who set up a partnership with a beekeeper, and then the beekeeper will bring the bees to the cranberry marsh for the late period of June after, and then they were in the strawberry beds before that, and then they'll go to cranberries, and they'll move on to, cucumbers or other fruits that benefit from pollinators. So a lot of times that partnership with a local beekeeper winds up being a good way for us to save labor in that precious October month.
Yeah. A little help with all of that work that our friends the bees give us.
Absolutely. We're so grateful for it.
It's become very popular in here in Rapids. Of course, we celebrate it quite a bit. No Mo May. We talk about this and the importance of it is not just to give you a break on your give your back a break from mowing, which is nice, but it's to help our bees, to help our pollinators, to create more of them. That has an economic impact. You may not think of it that way, but it does. We have more bees, we have more pollinators, we have more agriculture, we have more better products, better crops, all of these things. It all ties together.
Yep, pollinators are one of those really, I think they're very popular in the media, right? Because it's just this very obvious symbol of something that ties literally everything together. You have all of the communities and all the ecosystems kind of rest on the shoulders of these pollinators. The No Mo May, especially because bees are, if you think of how our, summer pollen season or flower season works, bees are not that interested in tree pollen. Because nectar is what they're really after. We get plenty of tree pollen early in the spring. And then in the summer, there are many, many, many flowers that bees can visit and take nectar from. But in that early spring season, there's not as many flowers blooming. Once the lilacs set in, there's enough there for them to be able to sustain. But before we get to the lilacs, there's just a couple of hepatica and a couple of trilliums, and there's not a lot there. So every little bit helps them have an earlier season food source. So that's part of the reason they chose May for that.
Are there other things that we can do, no matter where, even if you don't live necessarily next to a cranberry marsh or near one, that we can do to help out our growers?
Helping out growers comes in a lot of forms. Buying cranberries and eating cranberries, of course, is one very favored one. But
done.
Also,
doing it. I can do that. Yeah. We can do that one.
We also really are grateful for the support that we get at the Cranberry Festival and the Cranberry Blossom Festival in those times, because having support from our community members helps when we have, when we've got things that we need to get accomplished, being able to say, hey, the cranberry growers are our good neighbors. We're glad to have them in the community is always, really beneficial. So I'm trying to think of, helping out your pollinators, buying, especially Wisconsin cranberries, but buying cranberries. It's also great for us when you purchase locally produced honey also. That helps our beekeepers out, and that helps us out. And, it's easy to, look at the shelf and say, here's the basic one that came from who knows where. And then here's the one in the glass jar that came from down the street. And that's usually a guy down the street, and they're really glad to get your business. So love those as well. And then also working with, if you feel called, if you're the person who has enough free time to help serve on town boards or other committees that can help when people are talking about, how do we use the best, how do we make the best use of the resources of our communities, giving your time there helps the community as a whole and therefore also helps Granbury Growers.
Really good answer, Allison. I didn't think about that part about being on boards and everything. That's a really good idea. And the comment about our honey, I hadn't even thought of that, even though we were just talking about it. I wouldn't have made that connection and everything. That's really cool. I appreciate that. We got about 4 or 5 minutes left. If you don't mind, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but I would like to, I went to do some research for our conversation today, and I found this website, fruitwisc.edu. That's fruit.wisc.edu. It's has a bunch of the latest cranberry news and resources on it. It's Wisconsin Fruit. On here, I found a number of different articles, but one I just came across the other day, this report about feral Andine blueberry, the American cranberry hybrids. I just want to talk about hybrids in general, if that's all right with you, because I find that fascinating. I find it very interesting, especially in today's culture where no matter what we're talking about, there's mashups. There's combinations. We're doing more and more of that than we've ever done, whether it's in music or entertainment or in our food. With a limited amount of time, of course, what does this all involve? And what do you find is the interesting part about hybrids and doing that work? Did I lose Allison? Did I lose her? We lost her. We lost the connection. I think I had a good question, too. Or did I stump you, Allison? And she just couldn't handle it. No, Allison wouldn't do that. Allison, let's see here if she can join us for the last couple of minutes or not. If not, that website I was talking about, that article is fantastic and could be really interesting, I think, to a lot of people out there. I encourage you to check that out. Again, it's the first report. That's the first couple lines of it. It's right away there, up there when you pull up the website, fruit.wisc.edu. Go ahead and check that out and might find out some really interesting information going on with our cranberry industry, not just about cranberries, but about these hybrids that are going on, blueberry, cranberry hybrids, all kinds of different things that they're working on to go along with, of course, the great cranberries that we have for sale in this state. And Allison brought up a really good point. Cranberries are great. We're not talking bad about any other cranberry growers in any other states or anything like that. But let's be honest, we're doing this show from Wisconsin. We support local. So when you are looking for ways to support your growers, support our ag industry, support our farmers, there is farmers markets all the time, all summer long, no matter where you're listening to us. There are farmer markets available. Encourage you to attend those, check those out. And when you're in the store and you're looking at all these different options that you got, because there's a billion options for everything nowadays. You cannot go to the store to just find one thing. There's a billion opportunities for a million things there. You're going to see a lot of different cranberries out there. Look for that Made in Wisconsin label. It's a green label. It's right there for you. It lets you know that not only are you buying probably the most tasty product you can buy, but you're also buying something that is going to keep the money in this state, that is going to help support locals, help our ag industry right here in this state. Encourage you to do that, everybody. We are going to go ahead and wrap up the show here, but I do want to thank our guests. A big thank you, of course, to Jillian Ekna for joining us from Visit Rome. Appreciate the time from Jillian. And Allison, I know I'm sorry we got cut off there. I don't know what happened, but I do want to thank Allison John Jack for joining us, Cranberry Outreach Specialist with UW-Madison Extension Wood County. Always appreciate the time from our guests, even if they get cut off. Even if that happens, that's all right. We got great stuff lined up for you. We're going to wrap up the week of Morning Magazine tomorrow. Going to be a great one. We're going to kick it off with Senator Patrick Teston joining us. Looking forward to that. Always an open and fun conversation with Senator Teston to look forward to. That is going to be fun, and we'll have some more great stuff joining us. So be sure to be here tomorrow right at 97.5 FM, 1320 AM, WFHR, where we are locally grown radio.